Hi there, and welcome to another OSLA podcast. Careers in Health podcast. My guest today is Dr. David Newman. David is an internationally recognised aerospace medicine specialist and professor of aerospace medicine with over 30 years of experience in the field. He previously served in the Royal Australian Air Force for 13 years as an officer and an aviation medicine specialist, and has acted as an expert consultant in over 26 accident investigations. David, welcome to the podcast.
It's a pleasure, Todd. Thanks for having me.
David, can we start with what aerospace medicine actually is? What are the sorts of things that this encompasses?
Well, aerospace medicine is a pretty unique niche field, and it combines a lot of aspects of medical practice, but also scientific research as well. In a nutshell, and this is a conversation I have to have with a lot of people when they ask me what I do, because it's not immediately obvious. The simplest way to describe it is making sure that people are fit to fly, either as crew or as passengers, and then looking at what health impacts there are on people who fly. So should unwell people fly, or what happens to well people when they fly? Because, you know, being at altitude and so on is not a normal environment. You know, we're surface of the earth organisms generally. But beyond that, there's a lot of clinical stuff around what conditions parts can fly with and under what circumstances we might allow someone who's got an illness to fly, when they can go back to flying after they've recovered from an illness. But then there's, you know, basic research in understanding the effects on people of altitude and high G and disorientation, all the way through to, you know, human factors and to psychological aspects of working as a team on a flight deck or in a military environment, as well as accident investigation, which is where, when all the other stuff has gone wrong, there's an investigation into what happened and, you know, steps to try and prevent that happening again.
David, how did you get into this area? Was it something that you knew you were going to do coming out of medical school, or something that grabbed your attention a bit later on?
I'm a little unusual in a way. This is all I ever wanted to do. Somehow I found out about this when I was quite, you know, young, probably 10 or 11. I had a bit of exposure to military aviation as a young kid. And I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to be a military pilot. Unfortunately, my eyesight was not good enough to do that. It was, you know, it has to be perfect, and mine was not. it's not an uncommon story. So I decided I'd go into the Air Force as a doctor, which is what I did. And I thought, you know, I'll be able to combine an interest in aviation with an interest in medicine. And that's how I got into it. And yeah, I got to do things in the Air Force in particular that I never would have got to do had I not joined. I did a lot of, despite my eyesight, I mean, I'm a civilian pilot. I did a lot of flying in the military as well, particularly in the fast jet side of things with the fighter guys, which was, you know, spectacular. So I really enjoyed that. So that's how I got into it. And, you know, did my time in the Air Force. I did 13 years in the end, very happy years. It was a great experience. And I got some fantastic training in the military in aviation medicine, or aerospace medicine. So I did the training in the Australian Air Force. I got sent to the US to do training with the US Air Force. And then I did over a year in the UK with the Royal Air Force doing advanced training, which is, you know, this fantastic experience.
What sort of experiences have you had as part of your career? What, beyond the flying component that you've just talked about, what sort of roles have you taken on?
I've been doing this a long time now, so I've pretty much done most roles. You know, I've looked after pilots in an active duty flying squadron, deployed with them to parts of the world. I've taught doctors how to be aviation medical examiners so that they can do medicals for pilots, which is a requirement. That requires special training, so I've done that. I still do that. I've done research, done a lot of research on the physiological effects of flying. What else have I done? And I've done quite a bit of accident investigation work too over the last 24 years, 26 accident investigations in four countries. So, yeah, so I've done quite a lot. It runs a wide gamut.
David, what does a usual working day look like for you nowadays?
Best part about my job is that no 2 days are the same. Let's see. I mean, I'll do a podcast one day, let's say. That's today. I've got an ongoing role as the editor-in-chief of the Aerospace Medicine and Human Performance Journal, the international journal. So that I do a bit of that every day, you know, reviewing manuscripts, sending them out for review, looking at the reviews when they come back, working with the journal staff. I do some consulting, quite a bit of consulting, which I've been doing. Pretty much that was my Air Force, post-Air Force life, was consulting in aerospace medicine to organizations rather than individuals around the world. And I still teach. So, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was in London teaching on the King's College Advanced Aviation Medicine course. So, yeah, no 2 days are the same. You know, in a month's time, I'll be in America at the Aerospace Medical Association annual conference, which is the big one that once a year. So that's good. The variety is everything, and that's it's not a boring job. It's not the same 9 to 5 every day. Every day I wake up thinking, wonder what today will bring. So.
As you mentioned, David, it is a quite a niche area of medicine. How do you go about training yourself in an area like that?
Yeah, and this is a good question. This is one of the challenges of this field, particularly for people who want to get into it. I mean, I had an email today from someone who's looking to get into it and seeking advice from me on how they can go about that. Actually, that happens quite often. People send me emails like that, looking for ways to get in. There are two fundamental ways. You join the military, that's what I did, or you can take the civilian route. I mean, the military, it has its negative aspects to it as well. It's not for everybody, that's clear. You know, as I was explained to someone the other day, while you get great training and experience, it also comes with some downside risks in that, you know, you may be deployed somewhere you don't want to go. It can be disruptive to family life because you're constantly being moved around. So, you know, people have to weigh up the good versus the bad there. If you want to do the civilian route, it's challenging. You have to obviously be a doctor, but you then have to get some basic training in aerospace medicine to understand the connection between the aviation environment and the medical environment that doctors are familiar with. There are some courses around, but you basically have to work your way through that and get the training that you need. Most civilian doctors who want to get into this field end up being aviation medical examiners and do medicals for pilots that are required. But it's also important to join organizations like the Aerospace Medical Association because then you get exposed to a whole bunch of people from around the world who are doing this as a field. And then you can get some mentors, which is important, and they can help you, you know, get where you need to go, give you advice. I mean, that's you can't put too high value on that sort of thing. So, you know, getting involved, going to the conference, meeting people, contacting them, following up, and putting the hard work in will generally get you somewhere in the field. I'm mentoring someone from Africa, trying to get her onto basic course. It's very difficult for people in countries like that to get funding and access to that sort of training. So, you know, senior people in the field like me can help the junior people in the field get into it and give them some, you know, good advice. But there's no substitute for hard work, like most things.
What are the things that you enjoy most about your career at the moment? Obviously, the variety seems to come through in what you've talked about, but what are the things that you enjoy doing on a day-to-day basis, and what are some of the things that you don't enjoy or find frustrating about it?
Well, the list of things I enjoy, luckily, is longer than the list of things I don't, which is always good. But no, I think the best thing, there are two best things really. In my years in the Air Force, I got to work with some amazing individuals, you know, pilots flying fast jets, the commanders of the squadrons, you know, who are experienced fighter pilots and sometimes experimental test pilots, you know, amazingly talented people, very humble. They're not like Tom Cruise in Top Gun. That's not quite the way it works. But incredibly skilled, highly talented, genuine, hardworking people, quite exceptional in my view. And just working with them, flying with them, I mean, That was a great experience that I look back on fondly. And but more up to date, I suppose, is teaching doctors about this field. Because, I do a lot of that. I've taught thousands of doctors over the years on various courses. And just recently, when I was in England, as I mentioned, teaching on a course, I'm teaching people that want to be there and they're eager to soak up all this information. And I can tell them all the stories that I've learned over the years and experienced, and just see, in some cases, a light go on above their heads, and I think that person's going to have a long career. One of my early courses, I trained a guy who hadn't really, I don't think he'd really thought about this as an option, but he got so into the aviation side of it that he's now flying 747s for Cathay Pacific. That's nice to see that. See my students end up somewhere in the field. That's rewarding. I like that. Yeah. Downside? Well, sometimes you have to deal sometimes with organizations or individuals that prove to not be as genuine as you thought, but that happens in any field. There's a lot of, you can't really escape paperwork. But I'm trying to think of bad things now, which is, generally overwhelmed by all the good things. So, but yeah, in essence, it's a field of medical practice. You have to deal with the regulator. There's government legislations you have to keep up to date with, and regulatory updates. But that's part and parcel of any field. So, yeah.
David, you mentioned a while ago that it was quite a small field. How many people are practicing in this area in Australia, for example? And for people who might be interested in doing something like this, are there career prospects and opportunities for them?
Yeah, there are. It is limited in this country, I have to say. We are a big country, but with a small population. What works for us is that the pilot population is dispersed across the country. So while, the majority of the population lives in the eastern seaboard, the major population centres, and clearly a lot of airline pilots live there too, operating out of Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide. But in the outback areas and more rural areas, there's a lot of pilots out there. Flying privately and commercially, RFDS pilots and so on, all of whom need a medical, need to be looked after. So that means that we can have doctors all across the country doing aviation medicine. So it's hard to put a number on it. I think it's probably 1,000 or so people probably doing elements of this work. Some are full time like me. That's not normal. That's unusual. But there's a lot of the majority of doctors are doing it as part of their wider practice. In their general practice, they might do some pilot medicals to varying degrees. But there are jobs at the airlines. The airlines have doctors. Virgin and Qantas have doctors. Jetstar has one, a former student of mine. RFDS is obviously a big employer of doctors. Now, while your focus there is looking after the patients in the back of the airplane, you're also involved with looking after the pilots, and you're employing all your medical skills in an aviation environment. So that's very attractive for a lot of people. The regulator, the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, has doctors working there that review the pilot medicals that come in to make sure they meet the regulations. That's another avenue of work. And then there's some of the academic people like me that do it, but my academic appointment's now in the UK. So I'm a professor there, but I was professor of aviation medicine at Monash for a while, but that program's now shut down. Yeah, they're probably the options, but you can make of it what you want. I know some doctors who will. Some of them own their own aeroplane and they'll fly out to a remote clinic and all the pilots will come in and they'll do their medicals in one big batch, and that's their aviation medical practice doing that sort of work. So yeah, you can be quite inventive when it comes to this field. Yeah.
David, there's a perception from the outside that you're often working with a well community of patients, and that the clinical load itself might not be as stimulating as in other fields. What would you say about that?
Yeah, there's an element of truth in that. I mean, certainly my time in the Air Force, I was dealing with people aged between sort of 18 and 55 who are generally fit and well. But then like any population, they can become unwell. And I've certainly seen some very interesting medical cases in otherwise well people who, develop a nasty problem. which then has to be corrected, not always successfully, but then if it is, then you've got to think about returning them to flying. You can follow a pilot for years doing their annual medical, and as they get older, it's more likely they'll start to get unwell. That's typical. So you can end up, if you've got a reasonable age group cross-section in your practice, you can see a pilot who's been well for 20 years who suddenly develops a form of cancer. I've seen that, sometimes quite a rare cancer. I mean, but pilots have heart disease, all sorts of things that has to be managed. They're generally, and this is a good thing, which we stress to pilots, because they have to have an annual medical, anything that's wrong with them is generally caught early. And it might be an incidental finding on examination, which means they can then get treatment early, and a better outcome as a result. Unlike the average person who doesn't get a medical until they're too sick, and then in some cases it's too late. So, but if you're dealing with 21-year-old pilots, generally they're very, very fit and well. But they still have to have a medical and meet all the required standards. But you're also dealing with patients who are well but highly motivated. And keen on the sort of work they're trying to get into. So, yeah, some of these people are quite inspiring.
David, one of the other challenges, it would seem, is that you may from time to time be involved in career-ending decisions and discussions with some of your patients. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's difficult. I've certainly had my fair share of that over the years, where a pilot, desperately wants to go back flying. And their condition prevents them from doing that, or the regulator doesn't want to accept or doesn't want to have the risk of that pilot. They feel the risk is too great. But pilots do lose their medicals due to illness, and in some cases that's permanent. But it often sounds, I'll be careful with my words here. It is bad for a pilot when that happens. It's quite devastating. They lose their career. But in my experience, if it's explained to them well and they understand all the risks and why they can't go flying, I mean, they're intelligent people. Generally, they understand they can't go flying with that. And in many cases, they're actually happier that they're still alive and they can continue to live with their family and just find a different source of work. Having said that, I have seen people with devastating illnesses lose their medical for a number of years and then recover and ultimately go back to flying. So it's possible to do that too. Each case is a bit different. But one of the things in aviation that we can do is if the pilot's not convinced that they're unfit to fly, you can put them in a simulator and say, show me. And if they can't do it because of their medical condition to the standard required, that's very obvious to them straight away. And they're far more accepting of that because they've demonstrated to themselves that they now can't do it, and that makes for an easier outcome. But it's always a tricky issue.
David, finally, if there are people out there who are interested in exploring this as a field, what would you recommend to them?
I'd get into it because it's a great field. It's been my love and passion for 30, 40 years. I won't say how many, but a lot of years. It's given me opportunities that I never would have had. I've flown in airplanes I'd never get access to. I've been around the world. I've gone to countries I'd never normally have gone to. I've done accident investigations. I've worked with people, some of the most exceptional people in the world. There's a lot to recommend it. For someone thinking about this, I mean, any career you take, you have to be passionate about it. Otherwise, it's just hard work, right? So if you're passionate about it, it's not so much hard work. It doesn't feel like it, although you still have to put the effort in. But as I mentioned, someone who's trying to get into this field, have to do some research about it, reach out to people, but get involved in the professional associations, particularly the American one. It's very inexpensive to be a member. The conference is probably the only one in the world you can go to where you'll get into the hotel lift at the conference venue and there'll be an astronaut in there with you. I've worked with astronauts on the editorial board and things like that. So you get some amazing people there. The conference in Chicago in May that I'm going to, the keynote speaker is the last human being to ever have walked on the moon. That's the sort of inspiring thing you can get access to. So, and they've got a website, obviously. So, yeah, look up Aerospace Medical Association, and then join that, and then try and get to the conference and just try and meet as many people as you can and ask for help and advice. Everyone in this field is very keen to get the next generation to follow. So, we're always supportive of younger people trying to get into this field.
David, thanks so much for joining us and sharing your wisdom and experience in this amazing field. Thanks for your time.
That's been my pleasure, Todd.
Thanks for joining me on the podcast today. For more great interviews just like this, download our app, My Osler, or visit the website at oslercommunity.com.